Welcome, Rabosai, to the spring semester, second Chazara of 2015 of Contemporary Halacha. We're going to go through numerous shiurim. We're going to talk about brain death, about inheritance, about hair covering, about family planning, shechita, doctors in the hospital on Shabbos, and electricity on Shabbos. Those are the topics that will hopefully cover the next hour and 12 minutes. Let's start with brain death. One point that we have to realize is that the question of brain death is not a medical question. Medicine defines what observable phenomenon are observable, but in terms of the moral question of when those various phenomena are defined as dead or not defined as dead, that's a different question, not in the realm of medicine. Just important to keep that in mind. Now, the way the body works, al regel achas, and even less, is that people breathe and people have heartbeats. If you want to have a heartbeat, you could have a heartbeat even if you're not breathing. That means that even after the body stops breathing, the heart continues to beat. That's the question of brain death. If a person's brain is not functioning, the heart is continuing to beat with an automaticity, even without any signal from the brain, is that considered alive or not? So Harvard, in whatever 30 years ago, decided that that is not considered alive, because if the person is permanently unconscious and there's no brain activity, then they are dead even though the heart continues to beat, and therefore you could take a beating heart from a dead person and put it in somebody else. That's called brain death is brain death. If we assume otherwise, that means we'll assume that since the heart is beating, the person's alive, and if you take a beating heart out of a live person, that's called Ritzicha, which is one of the Aseres Hadibros, and one of the Shemes of Bnei Noach. Not a good thing. The sugya starts with the following. The Gemara is talking about a person who is lying under rubble underneath a collapsed building, and the Gemara says, Ad Heichon Hu Bodek, Machlokes Ad Chotmo, or Ad Libo. Chotem is the nose. Olu Shonim Paskim Ad Chotmo. Now listen carefully. The Gemara says, when is there a machlokas where we should check? That's if you find his feet first, and then you're going upwards towards his head. Then there's machlokas if you should check ad chotum, mean both check both his heart and his nose, or just check his heart and not his nose. But that's what the Gemara says. Now Rashi explains that. Rashi explains that Rashi explains that what are you doing when you're checking his heart and then you're going off to check his nose? Rashi explains that the machlokas is that the opinion that says that you check, let's say, to his heart, what that means is you checked his heart, and if you didn't hear a heartbeat, then you know he's dead. The second opinion, and this is the point that Rashi adds that the Gemara doesn't say, that it's not that you want to check his breathing because you want to see if he's breathing or not, but you want to check his heart. If there's no heartbeat, then what do? You check his nose to see maybe there is breathing and you might have missed, which shows that you missed the heartbeat. The point being that according to Rashi, this Gemara is not telling you what defines death. This Gemara is telling you when you could be certain that the person is dead, meaning what are not the criteria for death, but how do you measure whether or not there is a heartbeat? Is it enough to test if there's a heartbeat by just looking at the heart? Or in order to determine if there's a heartbeat, you also have to have a second check by ascertaining that there's no breathing. And if you know there's no breathing and you didn't sense a heartbeat, then you know there's no heartbeat. So according to Rashi, really what counts is determining whether or not there's a heartbeat, which again we pointed out is the latter point in a person's life, because you could have breathing without a heartbeat. And here you have to say, not only is there no breathing, but there's even no heartbeat. So according to Rashi, the Gemara is not talking about what defines death. It's not a question of, do you define death by a heartbeat or by breathing? Rather, we are always concerned with the heartbeat. The question is, could you be sufficiently sure, based on no heartbeat, that there's no heartbeat? Or do you also have to check other situations, other physiological phenomena to ascertain that there is no heartbeat. according to Rashi, which is just about the only reason who really discusses this Gemara, it will come out that as long as there's a heartbeat, the person is alive. If there's no heartbeat, then the person is dead. In which case, a brain-dead person is very much, with a beating heart, is very much alive. And to take out that beating heart would be Ritzicha, as we mentioned. A number of other Mefarshim, the Maharsham, the Chasam Sofer, also indicate that the determinant is the heartbeat, not necessarily breathing alone. The Chasam Sofer says if there's the body is not moving. This is the question where they used to have a rule that you have to wait 3 days before you bury a person in case you bury them while they're still alive. So the Chasam Sofer says no, you could bury him as long as the body isn't moving, there's no heartbeat and there's no breathing, then you could assume he's dead. Meaning if you have all those three. But if you have any one of those, and obviously the one that lasts, that might exist last without any others is the heartbeat, that would not be enough to consider a person dead. He would still be alive if the heart would be beating. That's the first half of the shir. The second half of the shir discusses a mishnah in Ahalos. The mishnah in Ahalos talks about tumah, and it says, when is a person metame? The answer is when he's dead. The Mishnah adds, though, not only is a person metame when he's dead, he's also metame, that the corpse will also be metame if his head is cut off, if he is decapitated. Even though the body is mefarches, jumping all over the place, the person will still be metame, but that decapitated individual will still be metame, but oh hell. Now, what does this Mishnah tell us? There are four ways to read this Mishnah. The way the Rabbanut understands, and they assume, not like everything I've just said, they assume that brain death is death, that since he's not, they assume that it's that life is dependent on breathing, not like Rashi seems to understand the Gemara, and therefore, if a head is cut off, then the person is obviously not breathing so well. So therefore, the person would be considered dead. The problem with that is that we know that there are plenty of people, Superman, Christopher Reeve, in fact, he wasn't able to breathe, and yet he was married, he was giving lectures, he was traveling the world, and you're telling me that he can't breathe independently, and therefore he's dead, and he's metame ba'al, even though he's telling us and he's writing books about how he loves life, even though he's dead. So that's a question on the Rabbanut's perspective. Rav Tendler suggested that what the Mishnah is telling you when this decapitated person is nevertheless metame, that if the brain is not doing its job of integrating all the body functions, then the person is dead. So Christopher Reeve, even though he wasn't breathing, but his head was still doing, you know, was still integrating all the bodily functions. That's why he's considered alive, but the Mishnah is telling you that since the brain is not able to rule the body, that's why the person is dead. The problem is that that's not really true, because we understand that the body could work as an integrated whole even without the brain doing anything, meaning even after brain death. So that also is a problem to Rav Tendler's pshat. But I think what's Rav Shabtai sounded like his choice pshat in this is that which Rabbi Bleich assumes and Rabbi Schechter sort of assumes is the following. When the Mishnah tells you that the body's jumping around after it's decapitated, that it's tameh, what it means to tell you is that any motion will be considered life. If a person's dead, then they're dead. But any motion will mean that they're not dead, that they're alive, with one exception, and that is if the head is cut off. Normally, motion indicates life, therefore heartbeat is life. However, if a head is chopped off, then even though there is motion, meaning the body's mefarches, the person will still be considered dead, because this is not considered what we call a vital, a motion that indicates vitality in life. So therefore, you could actually use this Mishnah in Olos as a proof that brain death is still alive, by virtue of the fact that we're saying that this Mishnah is telling us that any motion would be considered alive, except for if the head was chopped off. That motion is not a vital motion, is not a motion of life, that would be dead, but is mashma from that any other motion that a dying or dead thing would be doing would be considered alive, and therefore if the heart would be beating, the person would be alive. Otherwise known as brain dead is not death. They're still alive. The fourth pshat, and this is the last point in the shir, the fourth pshat in that mission alos is Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he says that he agrees that whenever there's a person's dead, when any vital movement ends, whenever vital movement ceases, the mission is just being mechadish, that there are two ways to determine death. Either complete death, meaning nothing's moving, or if a head is chopped off, even if the body is completely functional, then I don't really care if the body is completely functional. The point is, the head is chopped off, so we, halacha, will consider that person or that thing to be dead. So those are the shitas of how to understand the mission of Olos, which shed light on the question of brain death. Ad kan, that shir. Let's go to the next shir. Let's talk about the halachas of inheritance. Yeah, question.
How is Rav Shlomo Zalman different than the
It deals with a question of a certain sheep whose head was chopped off and they sewed it back on and his heart kept on beating, so not for now. The next shir will be the halachas of Yerusha, the Zerush Shechta shir. The question is, we have a whole legal system and which has certain rules for inheritance. Could we follow Dina de Machusa Dina for Yerusha? Not if that is not necessarily the same as a person, as the Torah's rules for Yerusha. So there are two reasons, at least two reasons, why we will not follow Dina de Machusa Dina. The first is from the Maritza alone, is that Dina de Machusa Dina only applies when you're interacting with a guy, a Jew with a guy, so we follow Dina de Machusa Dina because of our interaction with that Gentile. But by definition, when you have Yerusha, the parties involved are both Jewish, so Dina de Malchus Adina does not apply. Secondly, the Rambam has a drasha, it's not in Shas, but the Rambam makes it up, from the Pasuk regarding Yerusha of Chukas Mishpat, the fact that he's calling it not just Mishpat but a Chok, that there's a component of Isser V'Heter, not just Mamonos to Yerusha, and therefore, to make any adjustments in something that is defined as Isser Heter would have a halacha be masa masha kaza batorah, and therefore any tnai, which is masa masha kaza batorah, is not valid. Similarly, hefker bez and hefker wouldn't work to trade Yerusha, because again, hefker bez and hefker is limited to mamonos components, mamonos halachos, but if we assume that Yerusha is Isser, like we just be medayik in the Rambam, that will not apply to Yerusha. So what are the Jewish laws of Yerusha? Point is that a son always gets, not, let's say a man dies, the son will be Yoresh, not the wife. The son will be Yoresh, not the daughters. Does that mean that there's no room for Tzava'a in Halacha at all? Well, not really. Because the Gemara Bavasa talks about, is Medayik from the Pasuk, but Yochanan ben Broka is Medayik from the Pasuk, B'yom Hanchilo, which is Mashbat, the dying man is doing something in giving over your Yerusha. What do you mean? It just happens automatically. You're not Hanchilo, you're not giving something over. So Yochanan ben Broka suggests that if a person wishes to adjust the Yerusha of his progeny, he could adjust the percentages of who gets what. That means that doesn't mean you could give your wife, it doesn't mean that you could give your daughters. It means that within the male sons, who are the Yorshim, you could adjust how much, what percentage each one gets. This one gets 10%, this gets 60%, this one gets 30%. If you articulate yourself in a positive language, you can't say, I don't want so-and-so to Yoresh, or I don't want him to get that, but you could say, I do want A to get 10%, B to get 30%, C to get 60%, in a positive way, that will be B'yom Hanchilo Esbanav. The problem is that this Gemara is talking about a Shchivmara. The question is, and we know that a Divrei Shchivmara, Kechzuvim V'chim Surin Dami, doesn't need a Kenyan, that's perhaps where we limit this opportunity of B'yom Hanchilo Esbanav. The question is, what happens if a regular, healthy person makes such a designation to readjust and to percentagize, if there's such a word, his Yerusha to his sons, will that father still be able to do it if he's healthy, or is it only limited to Shchivmara That is a question that the Gemara Bava Basra asked, and it's Nibayatul Ifshita, and therefore, we assume what happens if you have a Kshailan Mamanis with a Nibayatul Ifshita. We're going to just follow Mukhzakus, and each son is a Mukhzak on his own share of the Yerusha, and therefore, we will not, by a regular person, be able to follow the father's redesignation of percentages. So that, by a healthy person, will not end up being a solution for us. Rabbi Kveger points out that perhaps there is still a possibility for the father to adjust the Yerusha based on Halacha of Kibbutz. So the children have to listen to what their father say. On the other hand, others reject that, saying that Kibbutz Av is only Mishal Av, not Mishal Ben, and once he dies, it already becomes the children, so they no longer have to have a chiyuv of Kibbutz Av with those monies. The next point we'll talk about is the halacha of Pishnayim. Pishnayim does not mean that the Bechor gets double, gets two shares, and everybody else scrambles for that other share. It means that the Bechor, let's say there are 10 kids in a family, all of the children will get 1/11, and the Bechor will get 2/11. So if you have 2/11 plus 9 other children getting 1/11, that will equal a whole 11/11. Now, when we talk about Pishnayim, Pishnayim is only this reward to the Bechor of Pishnayim is only if that on that which the father has the muchzak, as the pasuk says, Bechol Asher Yimatzelo, that is matzui to him now, not what is roi lavo. So, for example, if a father bought a winning lottery ticket and the drawing is after he dies, that was not matzui to him, and the winnings will not be divided with the laws of Pishnayim, rather, everybody will share it equally. The question is, what about a loan that the father lent out but didn't collect till after his death? That's a machlokas tanaim. The Gemara concludes that loans will be ra'i, and therefore, if a father lent out a lot of money, it's all ra'i, and the Bechor will not have any special rights to that. The question that arises, though, what happens if it's not a regular loan, because every loan carries risk? Let's say it's a loan that has a certain level of certainty, like an FDIC, insured loan, for example, a savings account, or a halva to a bank, where there is a certain certainty. Would we say that that's still ra'i, because you don't know if you're getting it back, and no pishnayim will apply, or will we say that no, there it's certain, and therefore it's like muchzak. So here we have machlokas. The Noda Behuda, Rabbi Shachter, assume that it is still considered ra'i, and therefore there will not be pishnayim. However, other achronim, Darach HaShulchan, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, assume that if you know you're going to collect, then you are a muchzak, and therefore bank accounts, according to Rabbi Moshe and Darach HaShulchan, will be considered, bank accounts will be considered muchzak, and the Bechor will get pishnayim. Now, besides the question of roi and muchzak for pishnayim of a Bechor, this issue of roi and muchzak apply also to a different scenario. That is, when the husband is baal, is yorish, is ishto, there's a machlokas, I'm sorry, that which we say, there's a machlokas, when a baal is yorish, is ishto, there's a machlokas, meaning when the baal is yorish ishto as opposed to her children being yorish her, there's a machlokas whether he's always only yorish her that which she's muchzak in, or even if that which is ro'i. So if we assume that the baal is only yorish ishto and things that are muchzak not ro'i, like the halacha of pishnayim for bechor, so will the husband inherit his wife's savings accounts? If his wife's savings accounts are considered, like Rav Moshe said, like the Aruch HaShulchan said, that it's a muchzak, then the husband, just like a Bechor, got pishnayim because it was muchzak, so too the husband will inherit those savings accounts. If we assume, like another Behuda and Rav Shechter, that savings accounts, since they are loans, even though there is certainty to them, nevertheless they're only roi, then the husband, just like the Bechor will not get double in it, so too the husband will not yorish it, and those assets in the savings account will go to her children. Let's now talk about another topic within this shir, and that is the halacha that a person is not supposed to knock children out of a Yerusha. Lo tehei ba'avor yachsanta. The Gemara tells the story of Yossi ben Yoezer, who was unhappy with his son, that his son did not become a Talmud Chacham, So the father decided to donate all of his wealth to the Beis HaMikdash, which sounds very nice, but the Gemara says that the Rabbanim were very unhappy with Yossi ben Yoezer for doing that. Does that mean that you could never, that you always have to leave for your, even if you have a no good next son, you still have to leave for that person, that son? So Moshe says, if the kids aren't religious, or they married a guy or something, or caused extraordinary agmas nefesh, they broke off ties for years, then you could omit a kid from your will. But otherwise, if you just, you know, you wanted him to become a bigger Talmud Chacham, or he wasn't the biggest Ben Torah, that's not a reason to knock him out of a will. Next point we'll talk about is that's related to this is leaving money in, you know, when a person leaves the world to leaving money for tzedakah. So the halacha, normally when a person is alive, is that a person cannot give more than a chomesh of their wealth, because we're worried that you might become poorer yourself. But if you're going to die, we don't have that worry. So therefore, you should be able to give more than a chomesh, and therefore be able to fulfill the pasuk, the halach lefanecha tzedkecha, that your tzedakah goes before you go in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you the cheshbon. The problem is, as we just mentioned, you're not supposed to give, even though we said you could give more than a fifth, but you're not supposed to be mavir nachla from your children. So how much do you have to, are you going to be allowed to give to tzedakah and not leave for your yorshim, such that you will not violate lo tehei bavor yachsanta? So there are three shitas in this. The Ketzos cites the Gaonim, who say that it's sufficient if you leave your children four dinarim. Everybody rejects that. Second shita, as Tukachinsky says, that you have to leave a rov to your Yorshim, 51% to your Yorshim, and there's going to be 49% available to give to tzedakah. However, Moshe says that, v'al v'chasim sofer, that as long as you leave a davar chashuv for each Yoresh, which... then Ramosha wrote $1,000, now maybe $10,000, $20,000. As long as you leave a davar chasha for each yoresh, you could give the remainder of the millions to tzedakah. Yeah?
So, I understand the Gemara talks about giving half, right? So, it's more than 49%, unless you're saying that the Gemara is just rounding and then it's
49%. Could be. Okay. Now, just a side point, while we're talking about leaving tzedakah, how technically is that money going to be left at if a person gives tzedakah while he's alive? There's nothing to talk about. A person could give whatever he wants. But how could a person leave tzedakah for when he dies? After all, that tzedakah is not in line to be yoresh. So how could he adjust whatever that those monies to go to tzedakah? The answer would be, because mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. But wait a second. Tosis says that the halacha of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames is only if it's hushlash mitchilasa l'kach, meaning it was placed in a certain trust account for tzedakah A, B, or C. But if it's not, so what is obligating the Yorshim, or what's binding those monies to be able to go to the tzedakah that the dead parent designated the money to? So the answer would be based on the following halacha. We know by Beis HaMikdash, Amirasa L'Gavoa, K'misirasa L'Hedyot Dami. Question is, does that only apply to the Beis HaMikdash, or does it apply even to tzedakah? Meaning, if I pledged money to tzedakah to the Beis HaMikdash, so it's already the Beis HaMikdash is immediately. No kinyan, nothing else has to be done. When I say that money is for tzedakah, I pledge money to tzedakah, and then if a person dies, is it already the tzedakah's, or it's nothing more than a pledge, and he's dead, and therefore tzedakah never got it? Will tzedakah be like Amiras l'gavah, k'misiras l'hediot, I like the Beis HaMikdash? This is the machlok. The Beis Yosef says that this chumrah of the Beis HaMikdash does apply to tzedakah, and therefore, just as Hekdish owns the money from the moment of the pledge, from the moment of being makdish, so tzedakah already owns the money from the pledge, from the moment of the pledge. Even if the pledger dies, that money is already owned by tzedakah, and therefore, it's not a question of what did the Yosham want to do, the money is already owned by that tzedakah. However, the Ramah says that this din of Amiras L'Gavoa, K'misiras L'Hediot is limited to the Beis HaMikdash and does not apply to tzedakah, and therefore the Yoshim have to be willing to give that money to fulfill their parents' wishes. Let's finish off this shir by discussing how a father could indeed leave money for his daughters, even though they are not Yoshim, or for his wife. So the Ramah talks about a shtar chatzi zachar, to try to at least get some money for his daughters in the olden days, they would get half whatever a son's portion would be, leave half for his, half of whatever the son got for his daughters. But Rosh Hashanah Zalman says now women feel cheated, it's proper to give an equal share. So how are you going to give an equal share if they aren't your issue at all? So the way to do it is as follows. Let's say you figure out by the time you die you'll have $10 million. So what you could do is So the way to avoid the problems with Yerusha would be to be a three-step process. First of all, to write a shtar that you're hereby be mischayev yourself to somebody. You're hereby mischayev yourself. Let's talk about a wife first. The person wants to leave money for his wife, which she shouldn't be getting a penny. So before a person dies, he'll say, I'm hereby mischayev myself $100 million to my wife. And therefore, when the children want to, you know, they'll get the Yerusha, and the mother won't get any Yerusha, but the children will have to pay up that $100 million obligation. So once they pay up that $100 million obligation, then, well, oh, there's nothing left. So the kids won't end up with anything. The mother will end up with everything as the husband wanted. The problem is that if he does that, then if they get divorced later, that won't be so cool because his wife will be getting all of his money and he doesn't like her anymore. So therefore, he could say, I'll say that this should be chal, this obligation should be chal after I die. That doesn't work either because ein kinyan la'achar misa. Okay, so say a moment before I die. That doesn't work either because there's kalsa kinyano and the kinyan chalipin that's mechayev you in this hischayvus won't be binding either. So the solution would be something in the middle. You say, I'm mischayev me'achshav, so therefore the chalipin will work. It won't be a problem of kalsa kinyano. But you'll say that this is a chus. What happens if you're mischayev right now, maybe you'll get divorced and she'll run away with your money. But so you say that she only has a zechus givia a moment, sha'a achas lifnei mosi, and therefore she will be able to only collect, if she's your wife, at the moment before death, that will solve both the problems of Enkin Lachar Misa and Kalsa Kinyano. So Alocha Maisa, the way we would do it, since the Kinyan Chalipin has to be done, to create his chayvas, the way we would do it with the lawyer, we hold that Kelo Shalkones, so the lawyer would represent the woman as a chus for the woman, he would lift up his pen or his handkerchief and hand it to the husband, and the husband would be Mechayev himself. That model will also work if a person wants to leave to daughters. The father could say, he could write a will and say, this is what we call a halachic will, he could write a line that says, I hereby commit myself to give my daughter $10 million, and all the boys are going to, when they yarshin, are going to have to pay that outstanding loan. And then he could add, but if you just divide it all equally, then I hereby forgive this. I forgive this as chayvus to my daughter. And therefore, the boys are encouraged, if they want to get anything at all, to just follow the will that he outlined. And this way, his daughters will end up getting money, even though they don't yarshin. To conclude, Rav Moshe held that a secular will is enough, without any of the things that we just talked about for the past 5 minutes. How could that be? So it's based on the Rambam, who writes that Ein Mekach, even though a Mekach is not Nikneh B'Dvarim, but if there's a strong Gemiras Das, there's an Umdun D'Muchach, then you could be Koneh without a Maisa Kinyan. So Moshe suggested, if you have a secular will, that's a pretty strong Umdun D'Muchach, isn't it? That this is what you want. Therefore, you might not need a Kinyan, even though Kinyanim don't, you know, they might not need a Kinyan. That would be sufficient. That is the end of that year. Do you want to do hair covering or doctors on Shabbos?
Doctors. Sure.
Okay, that is on Shabbos. So the Gemara talks about lots of different sources for the halakha that we could be mechal Shabbos to save a life. The Gemara concludes from the positive achai b'hem, which teaches us even if it's suffix, pikach nefesh, even if it's a rov against it, it's still permitted. Question of hutra versus tichuya that's sourced in the shayla of a korban yachid, she'im zman o kavua, if it's docha Shabbos, if it's docha tuma, and now the nafkamina by there, by korban, is if it's efshel kaim shneihem, if it's hutra, so doesn't do whatever you want. If it's tichuya, then you have to keep the, you can't violate any surim. So too, when we have hutra tichuya, we have machlokas hutra tichuya regarding chilul Shabbos, so if it's hutra, you don't have to do shinuis, you don't have to call a guy. If it's tichuya, then you could save the life and keep Shabbos. So turn the car on with the shinui and ask a guy, if it's not going to cause a delay in treatment, ask a guy to do everything. But the Ramah does paskin that pikuach nefesh is dechuya. So therefore, if a person has the ease to just avoid do things with shinuis and have a guy do it without causing any delay, the person should minimize chilul Shabbos. You should just know that that's a subject to a big machlokas, even though that's the Ramah's psak. Now, the Gemara says that if there's chilul Shabbos that has to be done for the sake of a person who's in sakana, then you should have the gadol do it. The gadol, the pasuk means that adults should do it to be mechal Shabbos. Don't just leave it for the children. The Rabbi, however, has a cute diuk that he understands the gadol means the Talmud Chacham should do it to teach everybody the proper thing is to violate Shabbos, not to let the person be in danger. Pikuach nefesh and v'chai b'hem does apply to a fetus. It does not apply to a behema. Let's now talk about four categories of cholim. First of all, if there's a mechash ba'alma, so we don't allow. There's a gzera d'rabbanan that he can't because a gzera of shchika sammanim, we can't take medications. Some wanted to be matir based on the Tosus who says that there's no gzera of klei shir bizman hazeh because we're not bucking fixing it. They want to say so too. Nowadays we don't do shchika sammanim, so maybe we should also permit taking medicines, but that Rav Shechter rejected because the Gemara itself says that the Isser of Refuah is not just taking medicines, it's that even putting a hot water bottle on a sore muscle, the Gemara says, that even though there's no Gzeh, it's going to be Shchika Samimanim, rather, it's just a general Otus Shchika Samimanim, it's an Isser Refuah. Of course, even though there's an Isser Refuah, things that are used even for healthy people, that's not a refuah, and there's mutus. Therefore, if you want to drink a shot of whiskey for your throat, that's fine. Mouthwash for your bad breath, that's fine. Even though you're only doing it because you're sick or something, or you need the alcohol to clean your infection in your mouth, but since it's a Michael Bream, it's mutter. As far as vitamins, I'm not going to go through the whole machlokas regarding vitamins, but Igros Moshe holds is nachum lahachmir to not take vitamins on Shabbos based on a machlokas. Let's now talk about the next level, Chol Shein Bo Sakana. Chol Shein Bo Sakana is either Nafal Mishkav or Chol Shein Bo Chol Gufo. Rav Shechter on the sins, the common denominator is that the person cannot function normally. In such a place, Amir L'Nachri is permitted. In addition, all Gzeros D'Rabbanan are permitted. Not Malachos D'Rabbanan, but Gzeros D'Rabbanan. Therefore, a Jew could play music, even though there's a Gzeri Yotu that you'll be attacking Klei Shir to help the Chol fall asleep. Similarly, mukta, which is not a malacha d'rabbanan, but it's only a gzeira, it's a shvus shema yotzi. Mukta, if you're allowed to hand the pen to the doctor to write a prescription for a chol shein bo sakana. If a person is sick and needs a bath, even if the guy boils up the water, heats up the water, so there's no gzeiras balonim to prohibit the person from going into the bath, because all of those are gzeiru d'rabbanan. Similarly, riding horse, if a person has a headache and if he goes horseback riding, he'll feel better, I don't know, something like that. So again, since it's only gzeira that he might rip something off, that should be permitted, as opposed to malacha d'rabbanan, like a malacha d'oraisa, you do it with a shinu, you do it with kilachaya, you do it malacha shen tzrich leguf, you do it davar shen miskavin, that's going to knock it down to malacha d'rabbanan, that's not permitted for chol shein bo sakana. Tzorchei tino, I'm sorry? Oh, so tinok, are always considered like a chol she'en bo sakana, and this is going to be not only for if they're in pain specifically, but even for any other tzrachim, if they need a bottle, if they're crying for anything else, all their tzrachim have a din, make them a chol she'en bo sakana, and therefore you're allowed to have a guy do whatever they need, if they're crying, or whatever other needs that they might have. How old is a tinok? So Michas Yitzchak has a funny cheshbon based in Yerushalmi, that children are supposed to fast half a day, fast for a whole day 2 years before their, let's say, bas mitzvah, that's 10, and they fast for a half a day 2 years before that, that's 8. So Michas Yitzchak suggests 8 years old is the age until which a kid is a chol she'en bo sakana. After 8, they're already, doing things like fasting. They don't have this cool anymore. Rosh Shechter disagrees. He says, what does fasting have anything to do with chol she'en bo sakana and the din of a tinok? The whole point is that they're not operating normally. So whatever the maturity level of that child is, if they're not operating normally for that age level, that would be a tzorech of a tinok. Let's go to the next point. The next point is sakonas eiver. For sakonas eiver, as far as lay people, you and I are concerned, we have to assume that any sakana to an eiver will equally potentially be sakonas nefasho, so do what you need to do. If something is defined that it's only sakana sefer, not a sakana snefashos, then you could violate all the rabbanas. Not like we said by chol she'en bo sakana, where we only permit gzeros. Here we will permit even malachos dirabbanan. But of course, a person cannot violate an iser d'oraisa if it's only a sakana sefer. The Gemara tells us that the ayin is tali on the lave, and therefore if there's something wrong with the eye, you could assume that there's pikuach nefesh and be mechala shavis d'oraisa. There's a... And that's what we would assume, that an eye issue would be worthy of a chil Shabbos. But the Meiri had a girsa, not sakonas ayin, he has a girsa sakonas aver. According to that Meiri, it would come out that one would be permitted to mechal Shabbos, daraisa, even for a sakonas aver. The problem is that no one really passing is like that. And therefore, Shulchan Aruch does not assume like that. We are not maker like that. And therefore, for Sakana Sefer, we will not permit a Chil Shabbos Doraisa. Unless, of course, there's a concern, it could be Pikuach Nefesh. Finally, when we get to the Chol HaShiyesh Bo Sakana, of course, a person could be Mechalal Shabbos Doraisa to save a life. And the question, there's a Machlokas, once a person is... there's a sakana, a chol she'yesh bo sakana, so are you allowed to do kol tzrachav? The Mishnah Berurah says, no, you're not allowed to do kol tzrachav, just because you could do the life saving, you could do whatever you need to save him, but you can't just be mechal Shabbos right and left. Mishnah Berurah says, you're not allowed, save his life, but you can't just, he's still Jewish, you still have to, keep halacha regarding him. However, Chaim Soloveitchik did not learn like that. He learned like a Magen Mishnah who says that kol tzrachav are mutter, and therefore you could be mechal Shabbos in any which way, as long as if the person is in sakanas nefashos. When do we say that you should do kal tchila for somebody who's still healthy and might become a chol she'yesh b'sakana? Then do kal tchila to prevent them from becoming a chol she'yesh b'sakana. But if they are indeed already a chol she'yesh b'sakana, then Reb Chaim held, not like the Mishnah Berurah, that one would be permitted to do kol tzrachav. Next point. What about when you go to save somebody? Are you allowed to come back? So here's the sugya of hitir sofa mishum tchilas. Let's say you went with your roommate or your wife or your baby or your friend to the hospital. Are you allowed to get back on Shabbos? Could you take a car? Could you take a train? Could you? So the halacha is that just like they permitted soldiers to come home if they would go out to battle on Shabbos, Hitir Sofa Mishum Tchilas, we wanted to encourage them to go out to battle to save, to protect the Jewish people, so we allowed them to come home. Now let's assume that they were traveling on highways, which would presumably be a Rishus Rav Doraisa, so they're carrying their weapons back. Does that tell us that we're being matir for them to do an Issur Doraisa to come home? Sofa Mishum Tchilasam? The answer is no. The Rishonim say clearly only Nisud Rabbanan will be permitted, so you could ask a guy to drive you home. I went to the hospital not so long ago on Shabbos with my baby, and I got a car, I got security, I got them to call security to pick me up and drive me home on Shabbos afternoon, because that's Amir L'Nachri. I went to be Matzil, and he threw a sofa Mishum Tchilasam for an Isser Drabanan. Shabbos, Hotzah might be different. Hotzah might be Malacha Grua. That's why they allowed the soldiers even to carry things home, because Malacha Grua maybe is a little bit more lenient. But otherwise, clearly only Isserim Drabanan. Except for Ramosha Feinstein's Psak for Hatzalah. So Ramosha Feinstein created a gigantic chiddush against the Rishonim and against classical Psak, and he said that would even permit Yisurim Daraisa, which is why Hatzalah would drive, at least the Hatzalah to follow Ramosha, would drive home from the hospital, even though they're no longer in emergency situation. Washington Heights, for example, they are not make like this Ramosha. Washington Heights Hatzalah, when they go to the hospital, they'll drive to the hospital, then they'll wait, then they'll have a guy pick them up and drive back. Similarly, in Borough Park, which is more of a Hasidisha, they follow more Hasidisha poskim who do not accept this Ramosha. There are a special, you know, there's a car of goyim that go to every call and take, let's say, there are four people go to a call. So this, you need those four cars that drove to the call to be driven home to the various Hatzal people's houses. So there'll be the call will go out, that's all guys will get there. 5 minutes later, four goyim will come and drive home all those cars to wherever they need to be, you know, so that when the people get driven home from the hospital by a different guy, the cars will be available for the next call if it would be necessary. Now, Hitiyah Sofa Mitzchilasim has certain limitations. And this is important because, let's say, again, a doctor goes to save a life, will he be able to come home? So, well, let's talk about the following limitations. The Seheter of Hitiyah Sofa Mitzchilasim is only if the person, the Matzil, or the doctor, went in on Shabbos. But if the doctor came in on Friday, or the Matzil went in on Friday, then there's no Heter to come back V'Isser. Secondly,
even by Goy?
Correct. Even by Goy. Even by Nisan Drabanan. Secondly, the only time that we allow you to come back with Nisan Drabanan is if you had the choice. So we want to encourage you to be, yes, go, don't worry about it, we'll let you come back. But if you don't have a choice, so we don't need to encourage you. If you have to go, for example, you're a doctor on call, you're a doctor, it's your shift, you have to be there. So then we're not going to give you a heter to come back, because it's only when you're not sure if you want to go, we're going to help push you. Don't worry, we'll let you come back. If you have to go anyway, we're not going to give you the heter to come back. And finally, the heter is only if you go to save your friend, your wife, your baby, your parent, your brother, not yourself. Because yourself, we don't have to give you a heter. I'll let you come back because you're going to save. You know you're going to go to the hospital to save yourself. Here it's just we want to encourage you to save somebody else, so we'll give you a heter to come back. So it's only if you're going to save not yourself, but Yisrael is not yourself. One other point. What about medical services for Shabbos, medical payments for Shabbos? Services. Let's say you take your kid to the doctor down the block. Could he charge you? The answer is yes. Interestingly enough, for the following reason. When you pay the doctor, you're not paying him for his services. Just like you're not allowed to pay Rebbe a salary, right? We don't get paid because we work. We get paid because otherwise we'd be, you know, either we're taking care of the little children or because we could otherwise make a lot of money, you know, watching cucumbers grow. And therefore, the schar that Rebbeim get is not schar for their teaching. It's schar, you know, schar batala and the like. So similarly, when you pay a doctor, you're not paying a doctor for his services per se, because that's a mitzvah and you can't pay somebody for the mitzvah, but rather you're paying them for their schar batala. This is a guy with an MD from Harvard. He could be making lots of money doing some other stuff, not in medicine. He could be in some HMO or some insurance company making lots of money, and therefore the money that I'm paying him is just schar batala. It's the community's contribution to keep him in the business. It's not paying him for his work, and therefore you can pay. I'm not paying him for his work on Shabbos. Therefore, if he did some medical service to me, I can pay him for that, because I wasn't paying for his work per se. In terms of pikuach nefesh, the mechil Shabbos for pikuach nefesh of an akum, so here there is a discussion of a ger toshav, and we wanted to not say necessarily that people have a din of ger toshav, because then you can't ask them to be your Shabbos guy. But we're not going to talk about ger toshav right now. The Chasam Sofer's had a shaila that they wanted a Jewish doctor to go save an Akum's life, and if he wouldn't have gone with them, they might have, you know, killed the doctor and the Jews. So therefore, the Chasam Sofer says that we are Mechal HaShabbos to save a Nachri, not Mishum Eva. It's not Mishum Eva, but rather because it's Pikuach Nefesh, so we don't get killed. And therefore, the way Rabbi Schechter presented in this year's contemporary halacha will be that if a doctor works for a hospital in which there is a possibility for him to be Mekayim Nefesh B'Yisrael, and therefore he's working for that hospital for Pikuach Nefesh of Achein B'nai Yisrael, it would be permitted to him to maintain that appointment, to do anything he needs to maintain that appointment, including be Mechal Shabbos for the Akums in that hospital as well. And therefore, if he's on call, he could go for that Akum, because that's part of his responsibility in his greater picture of being able to save Achein B'nai Yisrael as well. However, for example, there's a hospital in Albuquerque where there are no people that would be worthy of, who would warrant Chil HaShabbos, then it might not be necessarily okay for the person to be get himself into a situation that he would have to go in on Shabbos. That is the end of the Shiur on Shabbos. Let's talk about Shechita or family planning. Family planning. So there's a gigantic Chakira as to the Geder of Puruvu. Is the mitzvah Puruvu to have the tatzah of having children around? Or is it on the Maisa to do a Maisa Bia? The Minchas Chinuch assumes it's just the tatzah of having children. Rabbi Willig suggests it's the Maisa Bia. There are numerous nafkaminas. Nafkamina number one. Let's say a guy has children, and then is Megayer. Halacha is that they are children. You did fulfill Puruvu. So the Minchas Chinuch proves from here that there's no, you can't see the Maisa Bia was the mitzvah because he didn't have a Maisa, he wasn't mitzvah then. Just, there are kids. So now that he's a Jew, and there are kids involved, there are kids around, so he did his mitzvah. Rabbi Willig said, no. You could still say the Bia is the mitzvah, but once you have kids, there's no more chiyuv to do the mitzvah. Not that you fulfilled the mitzvah. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah, because you were a guy at that time. However, once you have kids, there's no longer a chiyuv to do anything anymore, because kids are around. Is that point clear? Meaning, what I'm saying is that it could be that there's a shear. The shear is, as long as you don't have two children, you have to keep on doing this B.S. mitzvah. Once there are two children, you don't have to do this B.S. mitzvah. It happens to be that if there were two children born before you even had a mitzvah, because you weren't Jewish yet, so you didn't do a mitzvah of having those children, because the mitzvah was the B.A. and you weren't Jewish when you had those B.A.s, but there's no longer any mitzvah, because there are two children around, so there's no more longer a mitzvah for you to do anything. Next nafkamina. Let's say a Jew has a child be'isser, or has a baby who's a mamzer. The halacha is that fulfilled Puruvu. Wait a second. It says the Minchas Chinuch that if the Puruvu is the Maisa Mitzvah, it would be a Mitzvah Ba'aveira. And therefore you see from this, from the fact that there's Puruvu, it must be that the Maisa Mitzvah is not, that the B is not the Mitzvah, but rather it's just having children. And we don't say, and the Maisa Mitzvah is just the Hechshir, we're not going to say Mitzvah Ba'aveira for a Hechshir Mitzvah. That's a proof that the Minchas Chinuch would have. Says Rabbi Willig, no. The Mitzvah could be the Bia. But again, we're not saying that you fulfilled Puruvu in the sense that you get brownie points for doing a Mitzvah. No, you don't get brownie points because it was a Mitzvah Ba'aveira. All we're saying is that you no longer have a Chiyuv anymore to have children because there are children here, so you don't have your Mitzvah anymore. Third Nafkamina is if Notza Ba'ambati, if a person was born from the zera that was swimming around in a swimming pool and entered a woman, so the halach is aviv hu l'chol davar, which we assume, Beis Shmuel says, even to mean that the father had fulfilled pruvu. So Minchas Chinuch says clearly, you see from this, there's no bias mitzvah, yet the father is considered fulfilling pruvu, must be that the mitzvah is just having children. The tatzah of having children around, even though they didn't do anything. Rilek says, no. Again, same point. The mitzvah is the bia. If it was notzer ba'ambati, he's not going to get schar for doing the mitzvah. It's just there's no chayiv anymore. Fine, that's the end of that discussion. Next point is a limitation to the parameters of puruvu. Puruvu is only mekuyam if zaro is miyuchas acharav. So there are going to be a few cases that is not zaro miyuchas acharav. Let's say a non-Jewish man has kids with the Yisraelis. Those kids are not related to him. So even after he's megayer, they're not related to him, and he will not have fulfilled puruvu. He has to have more children. Similarly, if a guy had children with a shivcha, those children belong to the adon. Even after he's megayer, yeah, he didn't fulfill. He has to fulfill puruvu again because the zara is not miyuchas after him. Thirdly, if a Jew has children with a non-Jewish woman, those children are not miyuchas achrav, and therefore he did not fulfill puruvu. Accordingly, if there is IVF, in vitro fertilization, using a non-Jewish, let's say as a husband and wife, the woman doesn't have eggs, or her eggs are not viable, and therefore they get donor eggs from a non-Jewish donor mother. So according to Rabbi Yosha's psak, that we follow the Jewishness, that the Jewishness follows the egg donor, so this kid is not going to be Jewish, and therefore the father, even though it's the father's Zera, is not in fulfillment of Puruvu. However, Rabbi Willig would say that we'd still permit the father to produce the Zera to have that IVF. It wouldn't be considered Zera Levatala because there's still a Kiyum of Sheves, even though maybe not Puruvu, but there's still a Kiyum of Sheves, even if there's no Kiyum of Puruvu because it's not Zara Miri Chazafan, and that Kiyum of Sheves will permit the Zera in such a circumstance. Let's go to the next point, and that is, what about after 10 years without children to get divorced? So the Gemara says, Eina Rashi Lasho, so you can't keep the wife. We're now going to show perhaps a kula or two why, if there's a happy marriage, even though they weren't able to have children, they should still be able to stay together. So the Meshech Chachma says, why did Hashem only command men in Puruvu, not women? So first he says, maybe because you can't be mitzvah somebody to do something dangerous to stay and just have children. And secondly, the Meshech Chachma says, because Hashem didn't want to break good marriages. And if men were chayev to have children, if they didn't work, okay, they could just take a second wife. Great. Easy enough. But if a woman was mechuyeves to have children, then she would need a get to fulfill her mitzvah. Says Rabbi Willig, accordingly, nowadays that a man can't take a second wife, we see that, again, just like a woman, Hashem didn't want to give her a mitzvah of puruvu because she'd have to get divorced. It says Rabbi Willig, if you have a man who would have to get divorced in order to be mekayem puruvu, because we don't take second wives nowadays. So, Rabbi Willig suggests he would not be mechuyev to divorce her because Hashem is not trying to have people break apart. If there's a good marriage, to fulfill puruvu. Next point. Let's talk about the parameters of the mitzvah derabanan of sheves or la'erev al tanach yadecha. There's a netziv, and based on this netziv, we're going to come out with a lot of kulas. That the Netziv says that once the person has one child, which is a kiyum of sheves, there's no need to divorce a person's wife, even though there's no kiyum of puruvu. Now, what are the parameters of this mitzvah, ba'erev al tanach yadecha, to have children even after you have puruvu, to continue having children? The Ramban in the Lachama says it's not a real chiyuv that you have to continue having children. It's not even a chiyuv derabanan. It's just a ke'ein yishuv derech eretz. It's a good idea. Based on that, we can understand the Rambam, which is passed in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam says that a person has a boy and a girl, he fulfills puruvu, and afterwards she could be mochalas. What do you mean? Why could she be mochalas? Isn't there still a chiv of la'erev al tanach yadecha? How could she be mochal? The answer is, it's not a real chiv. It's only a good idea. Similarly, the poskim say when the Rambam says that. Okay. In terms of a woman's chiyuv to bear children, the Rama says the following. Let's say a woman, it's hard for a woman, and she says, I don't want to have any more kids. Could she say that? The Rama paskins, im yesh labanim harbe, and he's scared to marry a bas bottom, meaning a woman who will be able to bear children for him, because there might be fights. The Rama says it's permitted to avoid those fights to marry an isha she'ena bas bottom who's not fertile. So if that's the case, perhaps we could suggest, or we will suggest, that so too if he is married, it's not like he's choosing a wife, but he is married, but he still doesn't want to fight with his wife because she can't deal with any more children, so perhaps it would be permitted after having fulfilled Puravu to make that decision. A woman might not be obligated to have more children, and a man could go along with that even though he has his book to avoid fights. Even more so, the Chasam Sofer says that if they already fulfilled Sheves, and a woman wants to drink a kos shel ikrin, if to make her not be able to have any more pregnancies, if she has a problem with pregnancies, she has a harder pregnancy than usual, mikra hadin, she doesn't have to be she's not mechuyevus to be mitzara atzma mipnei shibud lebaila. So he'll be able to stay married to his wife even though they're not fulfilling la'erev, even though they're not going to continue having children. Similarly, Ramosha says that if she's weaker than average in her pregnancies, so you could wait a little bit longer, even if you didn't have your second child yet. After Puravu, you could wait a few years. And if she fulfilled Puravu, and she's mamish sickly because of her pregnancies, then she could make the decision to not have more children. Rav Chazanish writes that even after one child, it's permitted to use a diaphragm pill, certainly even a diaphragm for 6 months to a year, by any baby, because quick successive pregnancies could be unhealthy, which is doctors' advice as well. And based on similar to this, there's an important kula that Rabbi Willig holds of that Rav Moshe rejected vehemently. That we see in the Gemara, that we see in Chazal and Chumash perhaps, that nursing is a natural contraception, and nursing would nurse for 2 years. So for 2 years there would be no children. Based on that, Rav Henkin says that there was a heter in Lita that for 2 years after a baby they would avoid becoming pregnant, but afterwards she would of course be again mishubedes to her husband. Rav Moshe was vehement and said there's no such minug in Lita, and but Rav Willig does go with that leniency of Rav Henkin. As far as different modes of contraception, what's good, what's not good, IUD is mutter, even if it's what they call Mirena IUD, which has a hormone which gives off hormones and stops menstruation entirely. Yes, that if there is a little drop of blood that's caused by those hormones, it might cause nidus, but it is permitted as a mode of contraception. The pill is also mutter. However, two things that would be us would be the use of a condom or surgery to do serus, is of course in the Doraisa. Those two would not be okay. Finally, in terms of people who want to avoid having children at the beginning of marriage, not so simple. The Rambam says lo yisa katana. It's usher to marry a girl who can't have children, and the first line of the Shulchan Aruch says that a person is mechuyev lisa isha kadei lifros v'lirvos, and the Rambam says it's a mitzvah to be bebo'el b'chol ona va'ona to be able to have children. So those two things coming together, both say that marrying a woman and not doing what a person could do to have children at the beginning is a violation of lo yisa ketana, and is not being boel b'chol olana va'ona to have children. So it's a double, it should be like a double iser. To finish off this year, what happens if there are genetic complications? Let's say a couple should do genetic testing before they get engaged, probably even before that. But if they didn't and they find out that there are genetic complications, so do they have to continue having children and suffer the consequences? So Rav Moshe says that she may not be mishubedes to her husband to endure a tzar gadol l'shanim harbei. Rav Shlomo Zalman says that if the tzar of this potential genetic situation would be considered more than a chomesh of the nechasim, then it's like even though it's not a financial thing, but maybe there would be no mitzvah puravu, because it would be a pain to him which is greater than his nechasim. The Ramah doesn't really like that svar, but he says a different svar. He says it's to have the children would be just unfair, and it's also to be mitzvah another year to those unborn children, therefore it would be okay if there are genetic problems. Let's go to talk about
electricity.
So electricity, the first point that Rabbi Packer pointed out is that whenever you deal with any question of electricity, there are like eight issues that you have to be aware of in determining, is this appliance going to be mutter, or is this action going to be mutter? First of all, figuring out what electricity is, figuring out what other malachas might be involved. For example, with light bulbs, incandescent light bulbs, it's not just electricity here, it's also the havara of the filament. It's when you use a microwave, it's not just the electricity, it's the bishul. When you use a tractor, it's not just the electricity, it's the choresh. You have to figure out, is there kavana? If you're walking in and the door turns on, you know, a light turns on or something like that, is that you don't have kavana? Is it mezasek? Figure out if it's grammar, is it automatic? Is there a time delay? Is it malacha miskayemes? Are you doing bedako or kibashinui? Is there an issue of mukta involved? Is there uvdin dechol involved? Those are all just general parameters for each person to think about when they have to deal with a electricity shaila. But that was all just, you know, part of, as far as introduction. What is the issue of electricity? So we will mention three shitas. The Aruch HaShulchan says that it's havara. You're lighting a fire. There's a fire in the walls. You see those wires in the walls? There's fire in there. And when you put the fire, you connect the wires, then it's like fanning a cheles. And we definitely don't pass them like that. There's no fire inside our walls. And we don't assume that it's havara. The Chazon Ish said, well, we got the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that we know from the sugya of Binyan Bekelim that if you take something that doesn't work, that doesn't really function, and you make it work from beginning to end, that's like Bonad. In such a case, Tosfos would hold that there would be Binyan Bekelim. And even worse is if this is connected to the house, it would pass the concept of Binyan B'Mechubar, which everybody holds like, and therefore making this thing that is useless and plugging it in and putting the electricity running through it to make it useful and purposeful, that would be considered either Binyan Bekelim, Binyan B'Mechubar, Tikkun Mona, something in that genre. Shlomo Zalman says, he rejects the Chazon Ish by saying no. So whenever you have a situation that you open and close, like a door, for example, we don't say a door or a window, if you close the window, that was bona. If you close the door, that's bona. So too, if you have something that's sitting here waiting to be turned on and off, that's just called darko b'chaf. That's how you use a door. You open it and close it. You open and close a window. You open and close the electricity. That doesn't, now I have a fan, now I don't have a fan. No, I had a fan. I'm just using it by either pressing a button to make it on or off. And therefore, it does not consider it bona or makke b'patish or tikkun mona. So therefore, Shlomo Zalman assumes that it would be an Isser Drabbanan, and it happens to be that the Wayu Poskim, not everybody, the Wayu Poskim, Rabbi Willow, Rabbi Shechter, assume, like the Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, that electricity would be an Isser Drabbanan, presumably, but there are, you know, the Chazon Ish holds that it's Daraisa. Others hold it's Daraisa. Now, in terms of subcategories of electricity, things that were interesting, I never heard of these things, in the concept of electricity, when we have, you know, you touch the screen, or you touch the mouse, and everything starts popping up and happening and lighting up, there the computer was on the whole time. Those are using semiconductors, where you're not creating a circuit. The circuit's already there, but by applying pressure, you change the resistance in the wires and allow the current to flow or not. Similarly, when you adjust, something is on, you just adjust the volume of the brightness, it's not as bad because that's just changing the volume of the brightness. It's shinui zerem, and that would, there's a different shaila. So perhaps if you do need to use electricity on Shabbos for some emergency medical kind of issues, it's better to have the thing on the whole time and then just use one of these semiconductors or resistances or change the volumes and brightness, etc. That would be less of an isser. As far as the understanding of the Chazon Ish's Binyan or Tikkun Kli, the Rav Asher Weiss found Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish were found lots and lots of Avos Malachas and Toldos Malachas, and they put them each in the right category of Malacha. Whenever they couldn't put a Tolda into a certain Av, they just pinned it onto Makkah B'Patish, which means as interesting as that it means, that they decided what's definitely Asr on Shabbos, and if you don't know what it is, so it's still Asr on Shabbos because of Makkah B'Patish. If you only, this might be the meaning of the Chazon Ish, that yes, it's not that you are actually doing the Melacha, what we think of Makkah B'Patish with a hammer on top of whatever Makkah B'Patish is, but that whenever something is considered to be problematic, you're doing something Chashav of creation on Shabbos, we put it by default in the Melacha of Melacha D'Oraisa, of Makkah B'Patish. Similarly, Ramosha was mashim a little bit like that, because when Ramosha was talking about using a microphone on Shabbos, and he talked about perhaps the voice is making some kind of roshem in the microphone, that might be Makkah B'Patish. Again, sounds like he might hold from this svara as well. There's a discussion whether or not if we assume like this Chazon Ish as we're explaining it, that the Isser is Makkah B'Patish, it could be that Tikkun Mana or Makkah B'Patish only applies if you have Kavana to do the Malacha. But if you do the Malacha by like you walked through something and the light just clicked on, you didn't intend to do it, and the thing that you did was only Tikkun Mana, so the Magen Mishnah says that there's no, you know, Tikkun Mana is only Chayev if you are Mechavin to do the Tikkun. And therefore, even if it's a psik resha, but you weren't intending to do it, so all other malachas, that's a problem. Maybe even doraisa, but by tikkun mana, that's not. That might be a heter, but I don't know if we pass them like that. Okay, that's as far as that shiur is concerned. Let's talk about hair covering for 5 minutes. Okay, so there, Mishnah tells us that there are two paradigms of tznius, is das Moshe, which means a woman is violating Yisurim Doraisa, and das Yehudis, which means she's violating the way of the women, that tznius is Rabbanan. And the Gemara, the Mishnah there says that Rosha Parua would be in the realm of das Yehudis. Asked the Gemara, what do you mean? It should be a Nisa Doraisa of Para as Rosha Isha. So you see, seemingly, you see clearly that hair covering for a woman should be Doraisa. Except for those who assume that it's not. The Chosen Deshin has such a suggestion. But that's the Parsh. Parsh is as Doraisa. Now, the Rashi, the Gemara there talks about maybe there's a certain covering that's Das Yehuda, there's different covering, is Das Moshe, is Doraisa, depending where you are situated, in a chatzir, outside, inside. But in that discussion, there's a Rashi, and Rashi sounds like he brings two deis, whether they're chiv to cover hair, is it an iser to not cover your hair, or is it a mitzvah to yes cover your hair? But Moshe, based on this, Rashi comes out with a gigantic kula, that if we assume, first of all, he says that we pass like the second Lashon Rashi, that it's not an iser to go uncovered, rather it's a positive mitzvah to yes cover your hair, if you have an almana, for whom covering hair is only an iser derabanan, is only derabanan, and it's 2 days in Rashi, so it's a safik derabanan, and it's more than a chomesh, so if we assume that it's a mitzvah, you only have to pay up to a chomesh, this almana, if it would be a hefzer more than a chomesh, we could, so since it's only derabanan and it's a suffix, which Lashon Rashi is right, we could be mekel to allow this almana to not cover her hair for when she goes, so that she could hold the job. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says that pnuyos have to cover their hair. I assume most of your sisters don't, and that's because we assume that when the Shulchan Aruch said Pnuyos have to cover their hair, that means if they're an almana, who's no longer married, Grusha is no longer married. He probably didn't mean a single girl. If you have a Ba'ula who is never married, so there's a machlokas, the Bach says that she does have to cover, the Beis Shmuel says she doesn't have to cover. Now the Gemara talks about, again, which case of hair covering is derived, so which case is only derabana. The Gemara concludes that midarais, it would be sufficient with a kalsa, with a basket on her head. But Das Yehudis would require her to cover all of her hair. There's a machlokas, Rishonim, what will come out in a chatzer, like in a house, in a chatzer. Rashi and Tosfos assume that in the maskana of this Gemara is that in a chatzer, a woman does not have to cover at all, meaning in the shuk she needs a kalsa, in a mavi she needs in a shuk she needs a full-length covering, or a did that's, you know, full body covering. In a mavoi she needs a kalsa, in a chatzar she needs nothing. So at home, in a chatzar, she won't need anything. The arach and the riyaz, the shatagibarim, the ashkenaz, the rishonim, and the ashkenaz, assume that in a chatzar, she will at least need a kalsa. The Rambam is taka make it like Rashi, that in a chatzar, she does not need to cover her hair, but it's proper to, yes. Chasam Sofer says that our minag is to be mafur even in a chatzar. And since that's our minag, it became Das Yehudis, and since it's Das Yehudis, she does have to cover in a chatzar. But the Gos Moshe is a little bit more makel and says that if it's private and no one's around, then there would be no chiyuv to cover in the chatzer. Now, when we say that Das Yehudis does require her to cover her hair, how much hair? The Pashtun means to cover all of her hair, but the Rashba says that she could have a little bit revealed in front, but not in the back. So the back would have to be completely covered, the front would be a little bit okay. How much is in the front? So the Gos Moshe says you could allow a square tefach. Ravadi says no, it has to be completely covered. Fine. Next point, what is the definition of a married woman such that she has to cover her hair? So is it going to be machlokas nafkamina for weddings? The Ber Hetiv says it's only after bias. Therefore, during the wedding, during the dancing, she's not yet married in a way that needs her hair covered. So some posts can permit that. Others say, no, once there's yichlad, she's already has a din of marriage, and therefore she would have to, for us Ashkenaz who do yichlad in the beginning of a wedding, they would hold that she needs to have her hair covered during the dancing. Let's talk about sheitels. The Mishnah says in Shabbos, Itz isha yotza v'peya nachris v'chotzer. Says the Shulchan Gibarim, you see that a peya nachris is mutter for a woman to wear. Rav Avadya says, no. I'm missing something about the Shulchan Gibarim. I'm sorry. I don't remember what he's adding. The Mishnah says, Yishu Yotza V'Peya Nachris. I'm not sure what Shulchan Gibarim adds. Rav Avadya says, no, that Mishnah is only talking about a single woman. It's talking about carrying. And as far as carrying is concerned, a single woman who's wearing a Peya Nachris is not considered carrying. But a married woman is not allowed to wear a sheitel. Tzitz Eliezer holds you in Sfaradim Kuriya Sheitel, and of course Ashkenazim and Gos Moshe says a Sheitel is Mutter. As far as that famous Arach HaShulchan, which people quote incorrectly, the Arach HaShulchan says that let's say there are things that are relative to a community, meaning we know that it's also to say Dvar Shebek Dusha in the presence of Erva. And there are two kinds of Erva. There's Erva that is objective Erva, and there's Erva that's subjective. So Arach HaShulchan suggested that nowadays, since many women wear their hair uncovered, let's assume that it's like a subjective erva in a community that doesn't cover their hair, so hair is not considered an erva. Therefore, one would be permitted to daven and say Kriya Shema in the presence of a woman with uncovered hair. In no way, in no shape and form, did he ever say that if people don't cover their hair, you don't have to cover your hair. Just means that it's not an erva that would preclude somebody from davening or learning in the presence. Other people argue on that and hold that no, if there's a woman with her hair uncovered, it's an objective erva, like shok, and even though no one else, the women around in this time, day and age, don't cover their hair, it doesn't matter, it's still a shok, and therefore you wouldn't even be able to daven on the train or on the bus, if there were Jewish women with their hair uncovered. As far as kol b'isha erva, also, we could have a question, a hakira, is it because it generates hirhur, or because the kol itself is objectively an erva, few nafkaminas? Let's say it's taped. So if it's taped, it could still bring an erva, bring hirhurim, but the tape, the music emanating from the radio or your phone or your whatever, the computer, that's not an erva. Another nafkamina is, let's say you hear her, but you don't see her. Perhaps, maybe there's no hirhur, but you hear the real voice. The real voice is an erva. Thirdly, by smiras, perhaps if it's an erva, it would be asur. But if it brings hirhur, perhaps one could argue that smiras won't bring hirhur. Perhaps. Let's finish off today, in the next 4 minutes, with some halachas of shechita. There are five psulim. Remember it with shochad ra. First is shehiya. Shehiya is the amount of time that it takes to start and finish. Shehiyak b'yena, throw it down, and do the shechita. So how long is that? So Ramaz choshesh that Ogmel Chabashan could do it really, really fast, and therefore, shehiya has to be We will not allow Shia even for an instant, even if there's an instant of pausing in the midst of the Shechita, that would be a problem. The Sfaradim say, come on, get real. How long does it take? Like the Gemara says, to take it, animal, throw it down, do the Shechita, take 7 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever it is. That's the first, that's the Shin. Ches is Chalada, that's to point or dig in with the knife. Third is Drisa. Drisa means to apply vertical pressure, going down, pressing down. That's not the way Shechita does. Shechita has to be the sharpness of the knife back and forth, not just pressure chopping downwards. Fourthly, the hay, I'm sorry, the resh of Shechadra, is Hagrama. Hagrama is to, there's a neck, you have to get in the right part of the neck. If you're outside of that area of the neck that's appropriate for Shechita, that's Hagrama. The top limit of the neck is until there's a shipui kova near the vocal cords. That's the upper part of the, that's the upper limit. The lower limit is the top of the lungs. That's the lower limit. Fine. At least as far as the windpipe is concerned. The esophagus has its own upper and lower limit. Ikur is the last, is the ayin, is the last of the five psulim. This is a machlokas Rashi and Rambam. Ikur, according to Rashi, is ripping, meaning the knife has a pegima, and since there's a nick in the knife, it is ripping, tearing, it's not just slicing. That's a still according to Rashi. According to the Rambam, ikur means something else. Ikur from the Lashon of uprooted, to pull it out by the roots, meaning if you destroy this, I don't have clearly, if you destroy the, when you do the shechita, you also disconnect the, or destroy the connections that hold the simanim in place, that they're not able to go back, that would be a problem of ikur. So it should be that after you do the shechita, if you pull the simanim out and let go, they should spring back to their original place. That shows that ikur was not violated. There are a lot of trefos, which I wish we all knew about. The most common trefos is trefos on the lungs, and that's why we check for them. The need to check, since the rove is that there's not a trefos in the lungs, and therefore midaraisa you don't have to check for it. But midarabanan, you need to check the lungs. What would happen if the lungs would disappear before you had a chance to check them? The animal would still be kosher. The lungs have two membranes that enable it to hold air, and it's only a trefus if it's pierces through both. It's zeh keneged zeh, and therefore it cannot hold air. But if it could hold air, then by definition it will be kosher. How much of the kana and the vesh have to be cut? Well, for birds, just the rove of one siman, except the rif of holds the chatchilish and shecht both. But for animals, it's just 51% of the kana and the veshet, and the Ramah says you should have a rov hanikur, not just 51%. As far as glat and chalak, as follows. The Rambam says that we never heard such a thing as blowing up lungs. If there's a sircha, you just sell it to the goyim. Now, there's a machlokas rishonim. If there are sirchas, do we assume that if there's a sircha, the Rashi says, if there's a sircha, it must be ein sircha, below nekev. If they find the sircha, must be that there's a hole somewhere and the animals chafe, nothing to, don't even look. Tos says no. If there is a, it's possible you could have a sircha below nekev. You have see a sircha, so it might have a nekev, so be makar not to eat it, or you could just check and, you know, remove the sircha and look to see. So that's a machlokas rishonim. Now, in terms of the mechaber and the ramah, the mechaber, let's talk about the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef says that there are two kinds of sirchas that are mutla chatchila. The Beis Yosef himself holds, you never check lungs. You never blow up lungs. You never check things on the side. If there are two sirchas, if you look at them, two kinds of sirchas are mutla. If it's sircha kesidra, that means they're the lobes that we saw at the shechita, they're connected to each other. Sometimes the way they grow is there's sometimes a connection between those two lobes from the side of the lungs. And similarly, a sircha ledofen sar, which is the front ribs where there's much tighter space in the front half of the body, so there wouldn't be enough room to get a nekev. Those sirchas are totally fine. You see such a sircha, great, it's kosher, no problem. It's mutar l'chatchila. That's what we'd call Chalak Beit Yosef L'Chatchila. And if you see those sirchas, you don't have to blow up the lungs. It's kosher the way it is. The Rama would say no. Even those sirchas, you would have to, would be not okay. You have to blow it up and do mishmash to see, you know, feel around to see if there's a hole there. Now, the Beis Yosef then says there's a sect, there are two other sirchas that are, that these yesh makshirim, the avid kosher, and that's if he sticks his hand inside and just, his hand just pushes through whatever sircha was there, so it was obviously a very weak sircha, that's okay for the Eved. Or if a sircha is a sircha bas yom, it's so small and loose, it's probably very recently formed, that also would be kosher only by the Eved. That, if those things, if that would be meat that has these 2 second sirchas, that's what they call Beit Yosef, as opposed to Chalak. Chalak Beit Yosef is that, doesn't mean perfectly smooth, because he allowed those two sircha, those first 2 sets of sirchas. But if it has these 2 second set of sirchas, then it won't be Chalak Beit Yosef, it will just be Beit Yosef. Glat doesn't really mean anything. It just means, meaning, because we see it, we on one hand, the Rama is more machmir not to accept any sirchas, but on the other hand, whatever sirchas we do find, when we blow it up, we sort of see, you know, there, it's very not clear. There's no consensus in the poskim or the hashgachas in terms of, we'll take 3 of them, we'll only take weak ones, not strong ones, and that is the discussion for Shechita. Hatzlacha Rabba. I look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
I have to run now. You're welcome if you have any questions.